Welcome to Joiners, the podcast with Tim and Danny, where each week we explore the world of hospitality by chatting with its most colorful characters.
Tim, good to see you.
Nice to see you. Nice pronunciation. Enunciation.
Yeah, team. You know, I was parking to come in here today, and
Fulton?
Yep. And I saw one of those, a classic symbol of the parking ticket scofflaw, which is the old parking ticket that's just left in the windshield wipers.
It's a tactic. I've done it.
Just so funny because I'm always thinking, like, one, does this work? I'm assuming no. But two, it's like the mentality of the person is like, well, they're going to go to give me a ticket and they're going to see a ticket's already here and they're just not going to give me
the
ticket.
It's double jeopardy, baby.
Yeah. And it's like, dude, the person giving the ticket obviously knows they didn't just cut you that ticket.
You know what Matsuo used to do? You know Steve used to date my mom. He's like my stepdad. He's born and raised in Chicago. Always lived here. Well, actually lived in New York for a while. But anyway, he would do a thing where he had
a stack of the printouts.
Yes,
Rob Lapata did that.
He would just trader thing. Yeah. They're both traders.
But yeah, he would like, cycle through them and see what was appropriate for the time of day.
And he put that out. And I also think I've also seen people who have a stack of those and they'll just lay them all out. And it's like, oh, you want to check my ticket? You better check all 30 on my dashboard. Maybe one of them's there.
It's just so funny the ways in which we try to cheat the system.
One thing I'll do is if I'm parking somewhere and I see a ticket on a car in front of me or whatever, if I parallel park, I'll look at the ticket on the adjacent car to see what their violation was to make sure I'm not going to do the same thing.
Is that a felony to check someone else's mail?
Well, I pay the ticket for them too.
Still a felony.
How's that mail?
No,
it's on the car. But that'll tell you if you're like, if there's like some weird, you had all sorts of bullshit signs, contradictory signs.
I'm at the point of life where I just never trust it. Like, even if I pay the park, even when I pay the parking, I'm like, there could be some other law happening here, some rule at this hour that I'm not aware of.
Now, let me ask you this. Does your wife take the same care while parking?
Definitely not.
No. Neither does Shannon. Yeah.
Same with the speed tickets.
Gosh,
I'll get some in the mail and I'll be like, Ellie, it's like the same speed ticket you've gotten before many times.
I know my traps. I know my routes and I know the traps. Here's an interesting parking thing.
South side of the park.
BK and Rachel, while I was at their wedding, it was in Jackson Park, I think, Conservatory. It wasn't the conservatory you got married at. Is it Conservatory?
Lincoln Park?
No. It wasn't
Conservatory. Where Garfield Park Conservatory.
Yeah, I know. It was like Jackson Park Refectory or one of those things. Well, this isn't really tied to their wedding, but I got a ticket in the mail and I looked at the time and it was like during their wedding. And I'm like, well, my car was in my garage because I Ubered to the wedding.
Huh.
I'm like, what the hell is this? So I write the city and I'm like, hey, my car was at my house. I'm like, okay, never mind. I'm like, that's it? Like, where did this phantom ticket come from?
And how many are they sending out?
Yeah, exactly. Like, is that just something you do to like, and then people are just like too lazy to like, or they don't have an excuse. Like, I had a very specific excuse. Yeah. I knew where I was at that very specific time.
I'm
going to
use this BK wedding excuse for my future tickets.
Your Honor. It's an age-old story. BK, like, damn, how many weddings does this guy have?
Yeah, he's on his seventh marriage.
they have a tally at the ticket place.
No, it's a different BK.
Do you try to get out of tickets?
I for sure.
I always do.
Well, only if I feel justified. If I've like done something wrong, I don't.
Mutual friend of ours, Megan Lorenz.
Yeah,
she posts about it.
She loves it.
Yeah, maybe we should do a short parking segment with her and she can give
just
us
how to beat the advice. Tickets.
Yeah. My last two that I've contested, I've used ChatGPT to write my excuse.
Oh, so
I'll give them like a brief overview. Like, this is what I always say, please.
It's a clever AI use.
I'm very polite with AI. Just in case.
Just in case.
So the robots take mercy on me.
In case they already have full control.
Yeah, like, I got parking. Could you please write an excuse? Or I have to write to the city of Chicago. Parking's out of control. But you know, it's not out of control. This week's guest. It's a good conversation.
Yeah, he's a very measured man.
Yeah.
Mellow the food's dude, out of control, delicious.
Cool, calm, and collected.
But the man is very cool and controlled.
That's right. He's a Chicago transplant. Grew up in Chattanooga, Tennessee. My mom would call it.
Yeah, he went to school there. I think he grew up
in. Oh, yeah, Lexington, Kentucky.
Yep.
Then he went to Chattanooga. My mom would call it Chat Town.
She wanted to move there.
She was obsessed with Chattanooga for a long time.
Yeah, I remember that.
And then COVID happened, and she's like, well, great. Chattanooga's discovered. Everything's way too expensive now. She's like, I missed my window to move to Chattanooga. I hope my mom can someday find peace with Chattanooga. But anyway, so yeah, went to spend some time up in the, it would be the Berkshires up there?
No.
Adirondack, something.
Yeah, it was like in the
upstate Catskills, New York. I guess.
Yeah, I think he referred to like the Hudson Valley and whatever.
That's the Catskills.
Yeah, I'm not sure. I don't want to, I'm no geography expert in upstate New York. But yeah,
well, anyway, he went to culinary school there. Worked up there and then made his way to Chicago to take over the space that was formerly Elizabeth restaurant and opened Atelier, which 9 months after opening got a Michelin star.
Very cool.
Not bad.
Big props.
Yep. And we may be teasing a new concept that's on the way in this episode.
Oh, yes, we are. Yeah. I forgot about that.
So without further ado, please enjoy our conversation
with Christian Hunter.
This episode of Joiners is brought to you by Branca USA, sharing Italy's taste with the world sustainably and respectfully. Fratelli Branca. Christian, welcome in.
Hey, hey, hey. Happy to be here.
Nice, nice. Yeah, we're happy to have you. Very cool. Do you want to tell us about yourself a little bit?
Yeah, where you're absolutely. From? So, obviously, name's Christian Hunter. Originally born and raised in Lexington, Kentucky for about 14 years. Then I went to private school in Tennessee. Then I was crazy enough to decide to go to culinary school, and I decided to pick the furthest culinary school I could from my high school. So I picked a school in upstate New York called Paul Smith's. Attended there for 4 years and then started my training. The Northeast and worked my way down to the Southeast, and then my last job before moving to Chicago was in Connecticut.
So at what point did you know you wanted to go to culinary school, or how did you come to that decision? I would say
I had a very strong interest in food. I'm not sure if I definitely didn't know what a chef was or what it entailed or anything like that. I never worked in a restaurant. I just said I loved food and I wanted to learn more about it. And that's what I thought going to school was going to do for me.
And did you always love food? I mean, like from a young age, were your parents good cooks?
Yeah, I think I've always been creative in that kind of way. Food seemed to be the medium that allowed me to use my hands. You know, I was that kid in the bathroom when nobody was looking, making potions in the bathroom sink with all the stuff I could find. So that kind of translated to me with food. And so as a kid, I would stand in the back and kind of watch my mom cook. And, you know, she wouldn't necessarily give me recipes, but I could see that she would look, she would taste the smells of it, the textures, like the sounds of it. And so learning to cook with my senses was one of the biggest things that I learned at an early age. And I don't know, I just kind of loved it.
Yeah, that's something cool. We've never talked
seems
about.
Seems like you had a calling.
The sound of cooking. It is very comforting. Like when you're over a pan with onions and it's just sizzling, that's a nice way to unwind after a day. I mean, for me, like, you know, absolutely. You're probably starting your day like that, but you know, I get home from work and I cook and that's kind of my wind down time. He's shaking his head. No, not wind down time. Fire up time for him.
Yeah. Like, I'm getting home. I'm not cooking.
Yeah. So Lexington, Kentucky, what time? So do you move for school?
Yep.
That's the first time you move out of Kentucky?
Yep.
Okay. And that was for high school then?
That was for high school.
Cool. Boarding?
Yep.
Cool. What was that like?
It was very, you know what? That was actually the first time that I had the opportunity to start cooking.
Okay.
On the weekends, depending on the dorm, if it had a kitchen or not, but we would do something, some sort of setup, or go to a friend's house that weekend and start cooking. So that was kind of my my fun time. And I'm not, you know, we don't have to go too far in it, but I definitely remember some parties on weekends where I was cooking, you know, burgers and hot dogs on the grill, mm-hmm. you know, while the parents were away. So it's like, you know, it was really fun.
Yeah. Was it always positively received by the kids you were cooking for?
I think so. I would like to think so.
So you get that positive reinforcement. Reinforcement.
Yeah.
And that was like your unique thing, cooking. So like when I was in high school, I wasn't cooking shit. I was making toast. That's about as far as my culinary acumen went. Did you cook in high school at all?
No way.
You still don't cook.
I cook now.
Yeah. I feel that sometimes. Yeah. Definitely.
I would just put a bunch of cookies in a glass and then let milk cover it with milk and go do something, come back, have like a cookie milk, let it marinate. Eat it with a spoon, you know, gnarly.
But there were kids where like at a party, they'd be like, you know, it'd be like late night, like, I'm going to whip up some donuts. And you're like, that kid's awesome. You were that guy.
Yeah.
That's
yeah.
awesome.
Definitely. That's cool. Probably not that many friends, but definitely in the dorms, I was that guy, you know?
Yeah. What was your dorm setup like? Mine was like microwave and sink.
Well, certain things we weren't allowed to have if they were seen, right? Mm-hmm. But, you know, you could get away with definitely there was a common mark, like a common microwave, but then... You know, a toaster oven here and there, a hot plate somewhere,
George Foreman grill.
Yeah, just quietly. But yeah, definitely.
So then culinary school, is that like, does your world kind of open up then?
Culinary school, definitely. The first thing was the culture shock, I think, from moving from Lexington, well, I guess Chattanooga at that point, up to upstate New York. Went to basically a school with like 1,000 people at it, so it was very, very small. Mm-hmm. And it was in the middle of the woods, and up to that point I think I'd went to like one 4-H camp, so I wasn't quite prepared for the wilderness. But after I acclimated, which took maybe a year to kind of like really fall in love with the space, then that's when I really was like, okay, let's figure out what this food thing is. And so I just got to learn a lot. I got to use my hands in the kitchen and work in a place where everybody else is kind of trying to compete and see who can be the best in that class. And so it was a lot of fun.
Was there like a farming component to it? You said in the woods, was it kind of a vertical operation?
No, it's just because it's in the middle of upstate New York in the Adirondack Park. Okay. We definitely did have a garden. There was also a sugar bush, which was really cool. So we would make our own maple syrup. A different department did that. I think our forestry department was in control of that. Really interesting school. You got a forestry department, you got a culinary school, and you have environmental sciences. So, yeah, very, very interesting. You have, like, kids walking around with chainsaws and hatchets, another pack of kids walking around with surveying gear, and then you got kids walking around with culinary knives and, you know, pastry stuff, and it's really fun.
Did you focus more on like savory when you went to culinary school, or you kind of did the whole thing?
They, for the degree that I was going for, they had you do both, right? You had to go do your fundamentals for pastry and for savory. And then essentially I was definitely more savory. So
yeah. Did you know that pretty soon? Pretty quick.
I think that I had never at that point even considered pastry. I was just like, oh no, that's not me. Little did I know, in order to advance in the culinary career, you got to kind of know about all of it. And, you know, the last few years, especially since I've taken over executive chef roles, you know, working on that pastry aspect of my game is like crucial to me.
Yeah.
So after culinary school, are people coming to your school to recruit, or is it you're out searching? Did you have to do like, did you stage anywhere? Or did you have to do like an internship, externship?
No. So basically, after culinary school, first went there for 4 years, only got a 2-year degree. Something that I don't like to shy away from that, because, you know, there's a lot of, you know, culinary school or not, you know, and I always say, if I had to choose again, I would definitely go to school again. Mm-hmm. For sure. Because for me, it was the knowledge base that I got behind it. Now, as far as getting into the industry, I applied to anywhere that would let me in. So I already knew that you're going to have to start at the bottom, dishwashing, GM cook, bottom. You're going to do whatever someone's telling you, 50 pounds of potatoes, cleaning artichokes, whatever it may be. So I was prepared for that part for sure. But essentially, I got my start after college in fine dining. A chef, a friend of mine now, was looking for a cook. And a friend that I went to college with at that point was already working at that property, and they put me on, essentially. And that kind of got me into fine dining, which kind of rolled over into what I'm doing now.
So did you like it from the jump?
So up until that point, I had worked in like mom and pop places during like throughout college, small independent restaurants. And that was a different lifestyle. It was definitely, I don't know how to explain it, but fun. You know, it was a lot of fun, a lot of having good times. But when I transitioned into this Relais Chateau property, it was a different game. It was completely...
Yeah, the systems were different. Organization was different.
Yeah, and, you know, you had to... It's a merit-based kitchen. You had to work from the bottom and work your way up. Didn't matter if you knew a guy, had a friend. Like, you start from the bottom and you work your way up. And that's basically how I got my jump into the industry.
So even though they were looking for a cook and they knew that you they eventually wanted you to cook, they still started you at like dishwashing is what you're saying?
No, I worked, I definitely had my hands in dish pit anytime to help, but that initial kitchen, I believe the first station that you would jump on would be like a muse. Like,
all right, so that was the kind of beginning. Yeah,
you just do a muse and then you're just prepping everything else, like you're helping.
Did you have freedom to choose what the muse was, or they would be like, this is the muse, you have to execute it?
You definitely have to earn that right. You have to earn that, but after some time, I was lucky enough to be able to get on the Amuse.
Yeah, that's cool.
Do you remember your first one?
Absolutely not.
Do you remember any of them?
You know, they were very simple at that time. I remember them being, we're getting seasonal produce, and because of where we were, tomato season only lasted like a month. And so at times it would be something really fun, but something easy like tomatoes marinated in tomato vinaigrette. So you just get this really pop of like umami, that acid, that kind of thing. But I can't remember.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
What was this restaurant?
So the property was called the Lake Placid Lodge. Okay. Up in Lake Placid, New York.
And it was a Relais Chateau place.
Yeah. That's, yeah, I did that for, I worked in Relais for a bit. Between upstate New York, Hudson Valley, New York, and Rhode Island.
Okay.
Are there ingredients that are very specific to that region that you were using at the time?
Definitely. Well, in upstate New York, I mean, their vegetables are really, really good. I also believe that their dairy and cheese is some of the best that I've had. And
you're very close to Wisconsin.
Oh,
be careful.
Well, we're talking East Coast.
Yeah.
And mushrooms, foraged mushrooms, really good. I mean, it's kind of similar to, I've got to believe that it's probably a little bit similar to here, probably a little bit more northern Wisconsin.
Yeah.
As far as the climate goes. So it's, you know, it's honestly very similar as far as certain things go. Now, obviously, when it's up there, it's a little bit colder. There were some winters we'd have, it was like negative 40 degrees. Like it's...
Yeah, mm-hmm. Higher elevation.
Yep.
Yeah. Hmm. All right, so after this gig, how long were you there?
Not very long. One of the things I remember picking up in college was that, you know, you want to work at a place... in your early formative years, you want to keep working. You want to strive, set goals, and push. And so I went with the goal of, you know, staying in a place for a year and a half, 2 years max to try to, you know, just learn.
Yeah.
Learn.
Once you've learned, time to move on to the next place and see what you can add to your skill set, tool belt.
Exactly.
Had your culinary identity started to form? Like, did you know the things that you wanted to make eventually? Like, were those seeds kind of...
Yeah. No, not at all. I think I was so focused on skill, you know, I want to get better. I want to get technically better. I want to be able to break this down, you know, be able to fillet this, you know, kind of work on my skills because that is, you know, until I became a chef, like the chef, you're cooking someone else's food. So there's no time, there's no outlet to work on your identity of food, I guess. Yeah. Or at least at that time for me, I wasn't considering it. It was just, I need to make sure I'm cooking my chef's food the best way I can.
When you're executing somebody else's vision, someone else's menu, are there things you're noticing like, I don't know if I'd do that, or I'd do this way, whether or not you keep it to yourself, you know?
No, because I think that if you're, depending on what chef you're working with, you may have a difference of opinion, but at that point I don't know the difference between this and that sometimes. And so depending on the chef you're working for, I feel like the chefs that I worked for, especially at that time, everything was done with intent. Mm-hmm. And that's something that I picked up on. It didn't click until much later, but everything was done with intent. So, you know, the reason why we cut this, the reason why it looks like this, the way it's presented is because of this. And so I'm cool with that. I love intent. You know, even if I don't necessarily understand it or it makes sense to me, like the fact that there is thought behind an intent, you can't argue that.
I feel like I'm the type of person who would be like, nah, I'd do it this way. And then like a year later, I'd be like, oh, that's why they did it that way. Like I'm always in hindsight. I'm like, I didn't realize what I didn't know at the time until I do know.
That's true. Absolutely. I definitely, to what you said, you know, kind of like, would I ever tell a chef in that moment? Absolutely not.
Right. Are you kidding me? Like,
but for that exact reason, I keep my mouth shut and observe and see why, you know, because if we did do this, would it add, you know, 30 more extra minutes to prep every day? And so that wouldn't be something necessarily that we can do because we got to get staff mail out at this time. So, you know, that kind of understanding that it's more than just food on a plate, there's an entire kind of organism wrapped around it, really, really, again, starts with the idea of intent for me.
That's a really good point. That's something I hadn't really thought about, is that when you're cooking, you're focused on that piece of the puzzle. When you're a restaurateur or chef owner, you're balancing 1,000 plates. The food may be the most important. Well, I guess it depends who you are, but that's the, you know, you're only focused on one part of that organism, like you're saying. Yeah. That is interesting. Now that you have, you know, you are at the top, do you feel the pressure of spinning all those plates? And which plate do you feel is most important for you?
Yeah. Well, I think my mindset, it's funny because when you said that at the top, I'm like, am I? I'm like, I feel like I work for, my mindset is that I work for my guests, I work for my squad, I work for the people that depend on me on that team.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, I have to start with taking care of the team that I'm working with, because without them, I can't, the restaurant doesn't exist, right? So, you know, making sure my team is taken care of as far as, you know, how do I make sure that the food is going out the best way? Well, my team needs to be feeling like they can put out food in the best way. They need to not feel like they're stressed, things like that. So whatever I can do in that manner is something that really matters to me. And then I go guests. We want to make sure that we accommodate as much as we can. We do a lot of accommodations as far as dietary restrictions and things like that. And we want to, because why not? You know, we want everybody to be able to come in and enjoy the experience at Atelier. And then, you know, we make sure that the restaurant is taken care of, you know, as far as, you know, taking care of the day to day, making sure that we stay up on, you know, business as usual. So, you know, for us, it's, well, for me personally, it's squad, my guests, and then taking care of the restaurant.
Yeah. In that order, what for your team, what are some of the stressors that you're trying to overcome for them so that they can focus on the task at hand?
Yeah, I mean,
I assume like HR type things.
No, I would say I think that a kitchen for me, and again, I want to stress that I'm only representing myself when I say for me, but for me, a kitchen is a place to kind of escape everything that's going on. For me, a kitchen was my place to find calm when the outside world is just chaotic. And so it gives me something to focus on. Like you said, I have ADD, so I already know that's probably why. It makes the noise quiet. So I can focus on the food, I can focus on that service. And so for me, that was always the draw about being in that kitchen and being able to kind of shut off everything else and then work on a common goal with everybody else. Like that was my, not was, it's still my goal every day. You know, you walk into the kitchen, everyone should have a common goal. You know, we all have a lot of things that are going on in our life, a lot of plates we got to juggle. And so if we can come into this space and create really, really good food and have fun doing it, it really shows. And it really, it's a place where like everybody's having fun.
This episode of Join Us is brought to you by Stock Workwear, where craftsmanship meets the cutting edge, where every stitch has a story of style and dedication. Stocks pervade fine hospitality workwear since the days of silver service and supper clubs. They know that the heart of hospitality beats in the details, so the garments are designed with the grace of yesteryear and the boldness of today, ensuring your staff looks the best, but also feels it. Outfitting everyone from grand hotels to corner bistros, Stock uniforms blend tradition with modern comfort and sensibility. Because when the workwear is impeccable, the service speaks for itself. Stock Workwear, where heritage meets performance. Outfit your staff in the legacy of hospitality with Stock.
It's in the dining room for hospitality, you talk about dealing or accommodating dietary restrictions, things like that. What are some other hospitality things that you want people to take away when they come visit your restaurant?
You know, there's a story. So back in January,
I guess we should say, new to Chicago.
Super new. Yeah. I'm just getting a chance to finally get around town, you know, and see the sights and kind of lift my head up a little bit. And, you know, this town is amazing.
Yeah. Do you want to talk about how you landed at Atelier when we can kind of go from there?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Because was it from Connecticut?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So previously I was the executive chef at Community Table in Litchfield, Connecticut. At that point, I joined that restaurant around May 2020 during COVID, and really, really had a great time just kind of pushing local food, vegetables, farms, like really, really awesome food. And it came to a point where I was kind of looking for more and wanted to test my mettle. I was familiar with New York City, being so close to it and having time to go there from time to time. And I wanted to kind of see what else was out there. Mm-hmm. And obviously put in a 3-month notice with my job and like told them, hey, I want to see what I can do out there and, you know, push myself to do more. And they were very supportive about it. And so I saw an ad on Culinary Agents for a executive chef position. And it was for an Atelier restaurant that was coming into a space that Elizabeth was formerly in.
Were you aware of Elizabeth at that point?
At that point, I was more aware of Chef Reagan's book.
Yeah, okay.
Elizabeth definitely was on my list of places that I knew in Chicago was on the Michelin list, obviously.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But I had never been able to eat there or anything like that. But I felt like there was an opportunity there, maybe. I don't know if, you know, at that time I was like, not sure if, I don't know what Michelin food is, you know. Never worked for a chef that had it or a James Beard, or I just know I want to make good food, and so at the highest level that I can. And so I took the job. I didn't take the job. I interviewed for the job and did a tasting that I thought I bombed, and luckily got a call back and agreed to the job.
Why did you think you bombed the tasting?
Because I feel like I'm always in my head a little bit, you know. I always want something to execute perfectly the way I composed it, and for a multitude of reasons that doesn't always happen when you're doing a tasting on the fly in a new kitchen. So that particular tasting, you know, I came in that morning, started prep, executed that same day, I think 4 maybe 5 hours later. So it was a lot of coordinating, a lot of like trying to get a lot of food together. So I was just a little bit bummed about how it all went out, but luckily it was well liked. And so by January, I had taken the position at Atelier to open the restaurant by February 21st.
Wow.
And so I worked out my notice at the previous place, went on a really quick vacation to Mexico City, and then came back to a James Beard nomination from the place in Connecticut.
Yeah, finalist for
Best Chef.
Yeah, Best Chef, yeah. Northeast.
It was completely, yeah, it was really cool, unexpected. And, you know, but I'm in Chicago at this point now. So, you know, that.
Do you think that was validating for the guys who hired you?
Yeah, like, I think so.
This guy got the retroactive nomination. We nailed him.
Yeah, I think so. And I think it was really awesome to bring that attention to that area, mm-hmm. Of Connecticut that I'm, you know, no one really talks about or notices. It's usually, you know, the cities, the bigger towns that get talked about. So it was really fun to be able to be a part of that, and do it with a team that was really awesome. And so, yeah, Atelier is, you know, I'm 3 weeks away from opening Atelier, and then that happened, and I'm like, well, that's dope, but I'm about to open a restaurant in Chicago.
Yeah.
So we got to kind of hit the road, and, like, you know, we buckled down and just started working. And it was definitely a struggle. It's not easy. It was my first 12-course tasting menu. I think previously I've done a couple of sixes and things like that. But, you know, tasting menus can be difficult, especially when you want to make it, you want to execute them the way you want to.
So did Atelier say, like, hey, we want it to be X-course tasting menu, we want it to be this way, we want, you know, what were the guidelines, I guess, that you were given?
Absolutely. So, yeah, that job ad was pretty much straight to the point. It was 12-course tasting menu in a space that previously had a star. So it to me, the expectations were very clear. You got to be able to execute a 12-course tasting menu, and you better hope that, you know, you're pushing out food that could be recognized by possibly someone that's looking at Michelin. So
did they put you in touch with Chef Reagan to kind of understand what the vibe
passing
was?
Passing the torch?
Well, we definitely talked about the space. We talked about, you know, the intricacies of that space, because it's a very small kitchen execution-wise. It's 22 seats. It's a 12-burner stove with two ovens. And we just got a fryer, so like a little baby tabletop one. So, you know, you gotta be able to cook. I don't know how else to say it, but there's no hiding in that kitchen.
Yeah, be efficient.
But, I mean, food-wise, no. I mean, you can't really, you just gotta go through it, you know what I mean? Like, you gotta go through the fire, and it was really fun.
Of the 12 dishes on the menu, how many dishes were you considering? Like, did you start it with 30 concepts and you narrowed it down to 12? And is it up to you to make those decisions, or do you have to do tastings to kind of get greenlit from, I don't know, your team or ownership or whatever?
No. So a lot of things have happened in the last year. Not a lot of things have happened in the last year, but a lot of transitioning is going on in the last year. And so while I am no longer running that day-to-day of the operations as far as Atelier goes, as far as the in the kitchen, I hired an executive chef who was my previous opening sous chef, as well as he was the sous chef at Elizabeth for a couple years as well. So this January, I hired him as the CDC to eventually become the executive chef. So he's been running that very much the same way. It's trial through fire. You know, you kind of have to, you can't, the last thing you want to do is, you know, kind of put pressure on someone's food. Like, they have to be in an opportunity that they can really express the food that they're trying to do, and coordinating a 12-course tasting menu. So for me, I am, my pace for the restaurant is about 3 to 4 course changes every week.
Wow.
That's because, yeah, I roll with the seasons. It slows down a little bit during the winter, obviously early spring, but as long as the farmers are putting out produce and we still have product coming up from the other places, like, I'm pushing out food. And so it's really fun because it's an opportunity for me to be really creative and to really play with the ingredients that are in that moment in the season and really get an opportunity to do it and have fun.
Yeah, I know. Is winter? Winter's got to be the most restrictive ingredient-wise. But I know you do a lot with, like, root vegetables. You've got a root vegetable jardinera.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do. Yeah, I love root vegetables because typically, it's, depending on the climate you're in, that's what you have for 6 months usually, you know. And so it allows you to be kind of, you know, creative, essentially. You know, my opening menu, I believe we did a rutabaga Caesar. So we sheeted out rutabagas, cut them into like parpadelle-sized noodles, did a blanch and shock on them to get them tender, and then made a really awesome like romaine Caesar dressing, and like made it into this kind of really pretty noodle salad that had this Caesar dressing on the bottom and like a bunch of cheese. It was like really fun, but it's essentially how do we get people excited about eating that rutabaga, you know, once it's been in season for 3 months, you know? And it's like, I love beets, but, you know, I want to have beets that are not necessarily always with goat cheese or not necessarily with blue cheese. It's nice to play around and have a little bit more fun and do other things with it. So that's where I see the opportunity for winter or anytime there's an abundance of vegetables that seemingly always be are always treated the same way, essentially.
Were you nervous when you put out that first 12-course tasting menu?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Because for me, there's definitely a level of, like, you put it out there and you let it, you gotta kind of let it live a little bit. And then there's refinement that goes on. So over the next week, you kind of get things tighter. Like, you get the, you know, you want the sauce to look like this, or the plate up should look like this, or the noodles need to be cut this length, you know. And it, the amount of time, like, you always want to put out a dish that is composed and perfect already. But I also have space to know that just because a dish hits the menu doesn't mean it's done, right? It can evolve. The ingredients evolve over time. The taste of this vegetable or this fruit here in this moment won't be the same a month later. So allowing that dish to kind of shine on its own and grow a little bit, it's kind of a cool natural kind of evolution to doing that 12-course tasting menu. And I kind of let that happen for the entire menu.
Circling back to guest experience and hospitality, what are the most common dietary restrictions you guys are dealing with? And is it just a matter of, like, do you build up strategy? So it's like, oh, we got another one of these guys. This is our fix for that.
Yeah. So we'll definitely, we'll accommodate vegetarians, which is awesome. I love being able to do a 12-course tasting menu and be able to accommodate vegetarians. We're not able to do, like, gluten-free all the time or dairy-free. And then depending, vegan, you know, that would be a tough one as well. That would require just a special menu completely. But we try to accommodate as much as possible. So if you can't have a certain protein, we'll flip that out for a different protein or something else. But basically, we want you to be able to eat and not take away from the experience that you already have. So whatever we're subbing in there, it's not just going to be a piece, you know, just a piece of broccoli that's been steamed, right? Yeah. We're going to ferment it. We're going to roast it. We're going to char it. We're going to do whatever it takes to make sure that it still hits the same way that whatever was on there originally.
Yeah. Is for that style of food, that level of hospitality, your pricing is pretty low compared to other tasting menus in the city. Is that intentional? Is it to make it more accessible?
I think so. So right now we want to make it accessible. We are in Lincoln Square. We're a bit of a distance from, you know, the busiest part of the city. And so we want to be a destination. We want to make sure that if you want to have a 12-course tasting experience, you can come see us at Atelier. And for the price point that we're at, I feel like it gives an opportunity for people to get a really cool experience that is, you know, a little bit different than what they would probably expect from a normal Michelin star restaurant.
And then you also offer season tickets.
We do.
With
we do.
Special perks.
We do. So Tim, my partner, is the creator of the season tickets, which is really awesome. So if you basically buy season tickets, you get a discount rate on the dinners that you come to and any type of special events. If we do throughout the year, you get access to that and things. So, yeah, it's really cool. It's really cool. I think that ultimately we're trying to invigorate our neighborhood. You know, we both live in the neighborhood. We both work in the neighborhood, obviously. And so we are neighborhood people, and it's a neighborhood that we like, and we want people to come in and visit us and kind of spend time in Lincoln Square. Mm-hmm.
The Michelin recognition, like, how did you feel? Were you surprised, you know?
Yeah, I mean,
we didn't really cover the
we should point with part. No PR team. Like, this was like, it's not easy.
Yeah. I mean, I had intent, right? The intent was there to hopefully be recognized. In what way? Wasn't sure. we were definitely surprised. I was surprised, for sure. Surprised. I, up until the point where they said our name, I was like, are we sure? And it was just, it was a really cool moment. And it was cool because I got to bring most of my kitchen team. They got to be in the city with us as we wanted. And that's the biggest part for me. But yeah, I was, still pinching myself today because, you know, it's a lot and it has a weight on it. It's not one that I'm not afraid to carry, but, you know, it makes it real, makes it very real now. And so as cool as it is, it also reminded me that, like, yo, I got more work to do, like, got a lot of work to do. And I'm excited about it, too. Not in a bad way. It's like the conditions of which we did Atelier and how we opened, and in 9 months we got a star, and, you know, that journey and how hard it was, you know, feel like I never actually got to put my best foot forward as far as creating food and really pushing as much as I could. So, you know, this is a cool opportunity because that story is still continued. You know, we are still pushing Atelier to keep being the best restaurant we can make it, and, like, the pressure is there. You know, we have things that we want to maintain.
Yeah. And there are more stars to get. Not to add a ton of pressure. But yeah, I could see that being like kind of relief, but also like, oh shit, like this is real. This is it.
Yeah.
Cool. Yeah.
How do you see it evolving and changing over time?
That's a good question. So I'm not sure. You know, I'm a big dreamer. I'm a big dreamer when it comes to, what I want to do and how I see things. So I do know that I love that space. I think that right now, as far as that space goes, it only works as Atelier. You know, it's a 22-seat, 12-course tasting menu. We can only do about 30 covers a night. So that particular space, but, you know.
Are you ready to tease a new space?
You know, we have other things going on. Atelier right now, I'm really happy with what's going on there. I'm really happy with what Chef Braden's food is really becoming. And right now we really just want to support him and make sure that Atelier is getting better every day.
How do you approach critiques with his food?
Oh,
just like, hey, you need a little more salt here.
Frankly.
It's, you know, it's really easy. He makes it easy, you know, because there's not much to say. You know, it's very thoughtful. There is a reason, there's intent behind the food that he makes. And so when it is something, it could easily be a preference of mine. And so the first thing I think about is make sure it's not a preference. The first thing I need to do is make sure I'm not trying to critique him on food that I like.
Yeah.
So that's step one, taking a step back and making sure I'm understanding what he's putting on the plate first. And then it's like, oh, okay, what was your thought behind this? Does this, what do you think of this? And then that's it.
Is this additive or not?
Yeah. And that's pretty much it. Like, his food is great. So I have full confidence in him. And as far as a new spot, so we have in the works, basically Laverne's is what we're calling it, which is my mother's maiden, my mother's middle name. but it's stylized because Atelier being a French word, we're going to stylize it like Laverne's, and, you know, just for an homage. But essentially my mother is from Cincinnati, Ohio, and I wanted to do just like a little bit of, you know, a shout out to her, because she was the first person to introduce me to food. And so this restaurant is kind of that homage to her. And because of her Cincinnati, Ohio ties, I wanted to bring a little bit of that Cincinnati chili.
Which chili. Chocolate in it.
That's all I hear is the buzz about this chili. And, you know, it's such a small part of the menu. But I'm really
excited.
Have
you gone to eat it?
Yeah, I mean, like, so I've been to Cincinnati many a times, right? I didn't grow up there, but I've had Skyline.
Yeah, not far from Kentucky. Yeah,
it's like an hour drive.
Right.
I'm excited. I know it's a very hot button item for Cincinnati folks, but... no, I'm looking forward to really kind of starting that restaurant. We are kind of looking at, we're trying to finalize the location right now so that we can get the ball rolling. But, you know, the idea for this is to be a upscale casual kind of place. I want a place that is as much as affordable as, you know, Atelier is. I want to have something else that is a little bit more approachable, especially in our neighborhood, that you can get that same level of quality food that you would at Atelier, the same intent, the same love, but you can come in and not spend 2.5 hours there. You know, you can come in, grab a burger, grab some great fries, grab a drink and head out, or you can come in and have that 2-hour meal if you want to. But the idea is to have a space that can work for people that want to come in and enjoy themselves at Laverne's.
Is this the type of place you could bring kids to?
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
And will there be a kids menu?
No, there won't be. I believe in eating food, so I don't know. I didn't have a kid. I never saw a kids menu growing up. I was either going to eat what was in front of me or
not eat.
Yeah.
And obviously there's dietary restrictions, accommodations, things like that. Right. We will for sure do things like that, but I plan on having a lot of vegetables on the menu.
Yeah, no chicken fingers and hamburgers.
Hamburgers for sure.
Yeah.
For sure.
Danny, you still order off the kids' menu. I've been out to you. Yeah. You're like,
we got to have some cheese conies. We're going to have some three ways. Like, we'll have some easy food.
So
like,
you're leaning into it.
Yeah, definitely.
The cheese on top, mile high cheese on top of the chili.
Exactly.
Okay.
Exactly.
And did you mention when this is coming?
I wish I could say.
You're looking for a space, right?
We're still trying to lock down the space.
Yeah, I forgot to turn the heat off. Sorry, listeners. And
it's
if you don't,
just going nuts, and I'm like looking
at. Yeah, well, it's the sound of the HVAC and the sound of me grinding my teeth, waiting for a break to go turn it off. So, back sans HVAC
for this part.
But so moving to Chicago, Chicago's hospitality scene is very close knit. Have you found it to be welcoming? Have you like kind of integrated into the? Did any chefs reach out and say, "Hey, welcome to Chicago"?
Yeah, tons of chefs have reached out, luckily. Obviously, we all kind of work the same schedule, so it's not like, you know, we can go grab a beer. But, you know, it's been really nice. You know, I would like to say that I genuinely enjoy this town a lot. I've barely scratched the surface of this town, but, you know, just from being here in a little over a year and, you know, the reach, people that have reached out, the response, you know, I'm really like this neighborhood. I really do. And I mean Lincoln Square, I mean Chicago, like everybody has been really cool. So yeah, I really want to set some roots here, like for sure.
That's a relief. I was afraid you're gonna be like, yeah, you're a bunch of assholes.
No. I'm out of here.
I can't wait to get the hell out of here. Have you noticed things though, working in Chicago? Have you noticed like the Chicago taste? Like, what do Chicagoans, are the things they shy away from? Are the things that you have to kind of tweak menus for?
Yeah, like a palate. Yeah, palate specific.
I mean, coming in with a jardinera, that's pretty key.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think so. I think that for the most part, people kind of eat the same.
Yeah.
You know, I think obviously there is a lot of steakhouses here. I am, as far as proteins go, I do shy a little bit away from heavy use of proteins, but I mean, I like a good burger. I mean, I will say this town is filled with really good burgers, and I've been eating them all.
Like, any burgers that stand out?
I mean, I think it's just like my like base level burger, Red Hot Ranch. Like,
yeah,
I think
it's a great burger.
It really is the best.
My friend Doug and I were talking about it last night, and he was saying how he took his partner's brother into Red Hot Ranch, and Doug like makes him get the dog. And then his partner, Lindsay, gets, like, the burger, and he's just sitting there just jealous of her burger the whole time.
You got to get both and a quarter pound of shrimp.
I'm sorry, what?
I go there hungry.
Oh, man. I've done the both move for sure.
Had you had a Chicago-style dog before you moved to Chicago?
No. The answer is no.
Do you have thoughts on the Chicago dog?
It's good.
What do you want me to say? He sounds like he's compromising.
Well, whether you want the salad style one with like tomatoes pickles, or are you doing the Depression era dog that's just like relish mustard, sport peppers, and onions?
I would go more relish peppers, like sports peppers,
yeah,
onion situation.
The more pared down one.
The one with the tomatoes, the dill pickle spears, the sports peppers,
the celery
the
salt,
green relish, the celery salt. I just, you know, are you okay? Like, what's going on? Like, I want to check on people. Like, you good? There's chili. Like, we can put chili on this. We put cheese. Like,
now that's it. Oh, yeah. You're talking about a Coney dog. Yeah.
I mean, we can, we don't have to just put, you know, I like vegetables. I love vegetables. But yeah, that dog is good. I definitely love that dog. But
it's not the only dog.
It's not the only dog, for sure. It's
not the only dog in town.
I will say thin crust pizza here is sick.
It's having a moment, huh? Yeah. Is that you didn't have that on the East Coast?
There is.
Or like that cracker crust.
Not the square cut situation. Yeah. I don't know. Are you allowed to say the T word? Is that a real
tavern? Well, yeah, because it's apparently from St. Louis, right? Okay. I think we talked about it with Monica Anger. Maybe I read it in her book.
Yeah.
But, yeah.
That's really good.
As long as we don't say chili crunch, we're good.
Isn't it chili crisp?
Oh, boy.
Oh, is that the generic version they want you to use? Yeah, Dave Chang? Yeah,
they dropped the suit.
Yeah, they did.
I think that was probably a good idea, but also you already made an ass of yourself.
I was like, thinking the same thing. Done, I was like, you've gone so far at this point. Like, now you've engendered all that, like, negative feedback, and then you also drop the suit.
It was a terrible PR move.
Yeah, I don't. I was wondering how that was going to shake out. I didn't pay too much attention, but it did cross my feed on Instagram, and I was just like,
"Yeah, that's how I first learned about it."
Interesting. I don't know. That's a very interesting. I think it's very interesting to see, because it's not just him or Momofuku. It's who has control over that, you know? And like, yeah,
it's wild.
I think food is free. Food should be free.
It should be.
Yeah.
Recipes are one thing, right? If you want to keep a recipe to something, that completely is good. But, like, no one should be able to control who can cook whose food.
Yeah.
Yeah, like, we talked about that a little bit with Sahil.
Yeah, right.
And just,
and
like,
the evolution of kind of what you were talking about. It's the migration of ingredients and stuff. Yeah,
the intent.
Yeah. My sister just took a recipe building class with Carla Lolly Music. Remember her from, I think, Bon Appetit? But she said that, like you said, you can't own a recipe. I think, like, there has to be 10% change in a recipe for it to be, like, your own, for you to, like, call it your own.
Yeah.
This is the same thing with apparel. Like, you know, we make uniforms, and you can't, like, patent a garment. You know, how many button-down shirts are there over the course of hundreds of years? You could move a stitch an eighth of an inch and it's something different. It's very similar.
Yeah, I'm with it.
All right, should we hit them with the gratuity round?
I think we should. You ready for it?
Here we go.
Can you handle it?
This episode is brought to you by Scofflaw Old Tom Gin, a tasty, versatile spirit. Created in Chicago in 2012, the product was born out of a need for a bespoke iteration of the Old Tom style, which is the slightly sweeter predecessor to London Dry. Scofflaw Old Tom Gin carries classic notes of orange peel, juniper, and coriander, while balancing on a subtle floral edge thanks to the addition of osmanthus blossoms. Its elevated proof is suitable in cocktails or unadorned. Scofflaw Old Tom Gin, complete your bar. All right, Christian, what's your death row meal?
Ooh, that's a good one. So
we've had people go around the world with their death row meal. We've had people ask for two different things in different seasons so they would never be put to death because they couldn't eat them together.
There was another loophole one given to me last night at this dinner, which was they would ask for peel and eat shrimp and just have an infinite amount. Like, they would just keep peeling and eating so they would never be put.
Sorry, who's giving you – you're taking this out of the studio? Who's giving you death row meals?
People know them from Joiners.
People are approaching on the street with
they
your –
are. Celebrities.
Whose was that?
That was Doug.
Oh.
I would probably, as morbid as it sounds, I would eat anything my mom makes.
Okay.
Because growing up, she just would make anything, like anything, and everything was great. And I know everybody says their mom's food is cooking is really good, but like my mom's cooking is good.
Like all from scratch, no recipe.
Right, right. And
does she have a specialty?
She did this, I'm trying to think. I mean, she cooked so much. I don't know. I'd say, like, her Southern food in general was always really good. Always really good. She would make really, really good fried chicken. Like, really good fried chicken. Or my favorite is, like, she would do a pot of, like, braised green beans with, like, long beans and, like, smoked turkey, and then served that with just like this really buttery cornbread. And like,
is she smoking the turkey?
No, we're buying them turkey smoked leg. No, we're buying that. But you know, anything that she made is my favorite. Like, because there is something about food when it's more than just ingredients, right? It's a feel, right? It's a hug. It's more than just the ingredients, and that's when I like really love food. And that's what we do at Atelier. You know, it's about an experience that we're trying to provide. You know, that fine comfort, like that hug.
Yeah.
You know, and so I would say, honestly, anything. She would make these mean burritos growing up. Like, she would custom order, like, whatever we wanted, right? She would fill it, roll it, and then, like, in the cast iron pan, like, sear them off so that they don't break open.
Mm-hmm.
One of my favorite things in the world.
You got to do that. Also, people not cooking tortillas, you got to cook your tortillas. You don't just take it out of the container. Danny's like, oh, shit, yeah, really?
That's scary.
I was making breakfast tacos at that ranch a couple days ago, and I'm like, you gotta...
Gotta
cook those tortillas. Yeah, there's certainly something to be said for, like, the comfort of food. Do you think... I mean, I gotta assume part of that is just being at the comfort of, like, your mom's kitchen table.
Yeah.
And, you know, being home.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. All right. What's your favorite hidden gem restaurant? And it doesn't have to be here in Chicago.
I don't know if it's... Well, I don't even know the name of it, but...
We'll figure it out.
So I lived in close to like Warwick, New York, and there was this little Polish restaurant near like Chester, New York, and you go in there and it's just Polish food, like top to bottom, making it all in house, all the sausages, they're doing pastries, they're doing pierogies, they've got different types of sauerkraut, all done in house. It's called Florida Bakery and Deli.
Florida Bakery in Delhi.
And it's in Florida, New York.
Florida, New York. Oh. You know, it's a Florida, New York.
Yeah, interesting. I
wonder if it's as scary as the Florida the state. All right. He's not going near that one.
Trying to get a sponsorship. What's up, Florida? No, just kidding.
This episode is brought to you by Florida, New York. All right. Favorite fast food?
I'd go like a Checkers.
Okay.
Like that's a first time we've got Checkers.
Checkers. Yeah. I've had Checkers, and it's
fries.
Good.
It's those fries.
Yeah. Checkers is kind of somewhat new to Chicago,
there's
I think.
There's one,
right?
Like, really far west on North Avenue.
Yeah?
Yep.
I had a Steak and Shake for the first time. Not the first time, but for... I haven't seen a Steak and Shake in forever, and I had one. I was like, oh, my. It was really good.
Yeah.
Really
Steak and Shake used to be, like, a random favorite.
Yeah. Culver's is solid, too. When I say Culver's I eat burgers, I will eat all the burgers. I don't care if they're at a fast food
How many
place.
Burgers a week we talking?
No, one a week. One a week. I lost, like... I had to lose weight, so I was getting a little too chubby, so...
How much weight did you lose?
Over the last couple years, I'd say 40.
Wow.
40, 45 pounds.
How'd you, just diet or diet and exercise?
Yeah.
You went from two burgers a week to one.
Just not eating as much. Yeah. It really sounds crazy, but like I had to like really think about my relationship with food and think, am I eating because I'm hungry or am I eating to like satisfy myself? And so... I need to eat to be hungry.
Or are you eating because you're in and around amazing food all day?
doesn't hurt. Does not hurt.
Yeah.
I love me food. I love some food. All the food.
All right. What is your least favorite food? Is this where we're talking about Brussels sprouts?
Whole cherry tomatoes.
Whole cherry tomatoes. Okay. But if you slice them, you're good.
I will at least eat them.
Yeah. My wife, this came up recently with my wife, I think last
just
week.
Just like the explosion you're not into, or?
We don't have to go into details.
But yeah, she's like, why? Because she's like, why do we have so many cherry tomatoes in our meals? She's like, I don't need this all the time. It, especially out of season, you know, in season, they got, you know, better flavor.
An in season one, I will eat.
Yeah.
Sun gold or the golden one?
Yeah.
All of them.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I don't. Yeah.
And overall. I think the difference between cherry tomato and grape tomato is only shape, right?
To me.
To me, too.
To me.
But is it official? We'll fact check it.
Tomato like, taste test.
I don't know. I don't represent Big Tomato. You
know? Hey, we're looking for sponsorships here. All right. Favorite cocktail?
Ooh, that's good. I've been really falling for mezcal lately. I had a really nice mezcal Negroni. That was really, really, really awesome.
Where at?
I've been there recently. I think like 2 days ago, actually.
Where, Scofflaw?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh,
is that where you had it? Danny's like, where the hell were you?
It might have been at Scofflaw.
Okay, cool. All right, nice.
But
what is your build?
For a mezcal Negroni?
Yeah, I know it's not equal parts.
Yeah, it would just be heavier mezcal. It would probably depend. Like a mezcal Negroni, probably using Carpino Antica instead of like we use Dolan Rouge for regular Negroni. So I'm guessing it would be something like, 1.5 mezcal, 3/4 Carpino Antica, 3/4 Campari, something like that. I'd have to taste it, like, straw taste as I'm making it, make sure.
Would you ever, it's not up, right?
It depends. I mean, it's funny, the mezcal Negroni is always on rocks somehow. Yeah. But Negronis, when they get ordered, you're always saying up or on the rocks.
I always say on the rocks.
Yeah, something I learned about myself very recently, a little too late in life probably to have this realization, is that I need my alcohol to be ice cold.
Yeah.
I do not want anything that's lower, warmer than ice cold. I'm just like, it's just not for, like, a white, something that's meant to be cold, I want it ice cold. Even like white wine, rosé, whatever, alcohol.
Yeah.
It's like got to be ice cold, sake.
Okay.
And so I like my cocktails on ice too, just for that reason. If I'm served something up, it better be like a normal sized kind of smaller end cocktail that's up so I can drink it while it's still ice cold. If it gets to that like room temp point, I'm just like done.
It's terrible. You got to
take it away.
Yeah. Yeah. Done. Did you just read, Maggie just put out a thing about what you're missing when you don't get warm sake?
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I saw Maggie last night.
I feel the same way, but
that's
also...
cool. I mean, I'd be cool with like that. If it's meant to be warm, like a toddy or whatever, that's cool. But something that's meant to be cold, I need it ice cold.
Yeah.
Like but, milk?
Yeah,
exactly. Yeah, you don't want ambient milk.
Yeah, no ambient milk.
Yeah. But like when things are cold, those flavors are muted, right?
Yeah. I think like wine will start to open up a little.
Which could make it seem more balanced, I guess.
I think it's just, but it's like my preference of,
Like
once that white wine gets to room temp, I'm like,
Ugh. Well, if a rocks cocktail is room temp, that means you've got a ton of melted ice in it. Mm. So then it's just a shitty cocktail anyway.
Yeah. Diluted and cold.
Yeah.
Yikes.
Yeah. Like McDonald's iced tea that's left in a hot car.
Fans of Malort.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, I like it.
You know? I don't mind Malort.
Okay.
Yeah.
How about you?
Thoughts on Malort?
I've adopted it.
It's like,
it's great. A shot of that and a Radler is really good.
Yeah.
Every time, we have friends from out of town, you get them a shot of Malort. The anticipation is bad. And then you take it and you're like, oh, it's not bad. Then the aftertaste comes in. You're like, well, it's a little funky. But that initial taste, it's not bad.
I had a Malort spritz recently.
Oh.
Yeah? And it was okay?
It was solid.
Yeah. It's like, you know what you're getting.
Yeah.
Danny, your relationship with Malort at the bar?
Yeah, I mean, we have it on tap.
Yeah,
since day one.
Is it smoother on tap?
Yeah, it's chilled, so it's like it goes down a little more smoothly.
I love those little glasses. They're awesome.
They're sweet. So
has that been there since day one?
Since day one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And have you noticed the demand for Malort?
I think it has decreased at our bar over time. But I think that you still have people who are, have out of town guests and they're like, you got to have a shot of Malort. Got to do it. You're not leaving until we do the shot of Malort.
Who has Angostura on tap?
That's in Wisconsin.
Don't they have it at Best Intentions?
Oh, Best. Yeah, but that's a Wisconsin nod.
Right.
Because they're like a Wisconsin vibe.
What else have you seen on tap?
At Kuma's, they used to have like Makers on tap or Woodford on. They had some kind of whiskey on tap.
They had Jameson on tap at Boiler Room Pizza.
Yep, Jameson on tap over there.
And they had this Jameson soft serve ice cream, which was actually really delicious.
Yeah, that was my business partner Andy's idea and creation.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
I did a, for one of the desserts at the restaurant, a Malort ice cream with an old style caramel.
Ooh.
Oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was.
I'd love to try that.
That caramel really came out really well. The Malort, like, it hits really nice, and then it finishes like Malort, so it's like a little goes a long way.
Yeah, that aftertaste is
the old style caramel was really nice, though. That yeastiness of the beer and that caramel sauce, really good, really good.
Mm.
You know what's really? The highball at Kasama. I think that was really cool.
Okay.
They have a highball machine.
You were lucky enough to get into Kasama.
Breakfast.
Yeah. Breakfast eyeballs. Yeah. All right. Moving on. Oh, here's our cameo question. What's your everyday carry? This is from Josh Yuwa on Josh from Jerry Circle Room.
Say that again.
So every day carry, like, what do you carry on you? What do you have every day? When you leave your house, what are you grabbing?
Okay, so I carry pocket knife, pen, Sharpie, and then denture glue.
Okay.
Wallet and keys. That's it.
You lost a tooth?
I lost 3 teeth.
Whoa. Is it a good story?
It's a solid story.
All right, let's hear it.
Yeah.
So I would say like a week after we were awarded our Michelin star, there was a adjacent Michelin party in Chicago. Went to that. On the way back, went home. No, sorry, went to the restaurant first and then started to Uber back. And I chose to do a Lime scooter. It was raining, but it wasn't too bad. I was like, fuck it. We'll go for it. And essentially, from what I remember, because it gets a little fuzzy, is that essentially I was riding a little bit too, you know, a little too freely.
Like, yeah,
I was kind of whipping it out a little bit too much. And just hit one of those potholes and just...
Welcome to Chicago. Oh,
yeah, man. Straight on my face and lost one tooth instantly.
Which swelling. Teeth?
These three.
Wow, the three front.
I could not even notice it at all.
Wow.
I've been without them for a bit. They had to get the other two out as well so I can get replacements.
Wow. I mean, your teeth look perfect.
Yeah,
I didn't notice it at all.
Shout out
to you. They're all messed up before and you got them. the straight dentures.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Did you get an upgrade or what?
These are dentures. Well, yeah. I've got to wait until I think next month, and then hopefully I'll be all healed up. So, let me go ahead and finish the rest. Let me just finish the story.
All right.
So essentially, I hit my face. Boom. Lost a tooth instantly. One of my big teeth. Ended up at the hospital. Concussed. Gashed up.
Ugh.
I was out of work for at least a solid week. I think. Ugh, had to like let brutal. Everything. Go down, went to the dentist, and they were like, yeah, we got to cut you open. So essentially, they split my gum open, extracted the other two teeth, and then gave me 3 bone grafts in there, and then sewed it back up. And so now
were you fully under for this?
Oh, no, I was awake.
This but was happening. It like fully Novocaine, so you didn't feel it?
Yes.
Okay.
But I could definitely hear
feel
it.
Man,
I could hear it. but they did a great job, and... Really, I thought I was going to be under, but they were like, oh, no, you're awake. And I was like, okay.
yeah, you're like, can I opt to go under?
Pretty quick operation for the most part.
Wow.
I'm in my last month of healing. And once that's
done. Are you in pain?
No pain. Okay. No pain.
That's good.
At this point.
Were you in pain that first week?
Yeah. Yeah, there was some pain. a little bit of pain.
Wow.
That happened, and that kind of made me realize, like, definitely a freak accident, but like no time to take a break. Like, I was really like riding a little high. Like, I was feeling good. I was like, yeah, we did this goal. I can kind of like, but it was like, nope, this can be gone real quick.
Yeah.
Like, let's keep pushing. 'Cause I didn't come here for, you know, I came here to establish myself and to hopefully help everyone else that's already pushing to make this a great food town. It's one of the best, if not the best already. So I just want to do my small part and like help push this food as well.
Real quick on the losing a tooth, because I think about this a lot.
Yeah.
What's your panic level like when you feel a gap in your mouth? Or were you too goofed up? Like, I mean, you had a lot of things going on.
I pulled that first tooth out myself.
Oh, fuck.
Because I was like, well, I think I lost a tooth.
what time was this, do you think?
10.
Oh, okay. Yep. So it's like you can go to the hospital.
Yeah, yeah.
So you went straight there. Did you lime scooter it over to the urgent care?
No. Take out the lime scooter part. Make sure I don't want to put those guys
on. No, there. Fuck no. Those scooters. I hate those things.
Wear a helmet. That's all I gotta say. Yeah. Wear a helmet.
Oh,
that's the thing I learned. Wear a helmet.
Yeah. But, yeah, you need a football helmet to protect your teeth.
Yeah, well, me, just don't be an asshole, but that's on me.
No, it's also on the potholes in the city. It's out of control, man. It's really bad.
Yeah.
Every time I go over one, I'm like, well, I have a flat tire. I had a car that had, like, I'm not like a big rim guy, but I had a Volvo that had like, when I got it, it had like the whatever, it had rims on it. And I got that winter, I got like 7 flat tires. It was like every other week I was taking it to All Day Tires on Division.
Jeez.
And it's terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah, not sweet.
And there is a thing where you can apply to get reimbursed by the city. So if anyone from the city is listening, can we get Christian's tooth bills taken care of, please?
Oh, no.
I mean.
All right. Now we can ask. So this is a question from former guest Cece Cuff. She said, ask Christian how he feels about Brussels sprouts on menus, followed by 3 laughing emojis.
All right. I love Brussels sprouts, you know. I do. When they're in season, I think that Brussels sprouts are awesome. It's a gimme. You know, it's Brussels sprouts. You fry Brussels sprouts, you put a little sauce on it. It's a gimme. And that's all. That's all I'm saying about it.
Very diplomatic answer.
Yeah, I'm not going down here.
I'm not getting taken down by Big Brussels.
Yeah, no.
Brussels, sorry. It is Brussels sprouts. Plural. All right. Actually, so maybe you're not the guy to ask, but why are Brussels sprouts so much better at a restaurant? Why can't I get them right at home? Should I just not try?
Because you're not frying them.
Yeah.
Okay. Like, I don't care how hot of an oven you're roasting them in.
Yeah.
Like, frying them is personally my favorite way of having them. And then if you start controlling what you're frying them in, it gets a lot more fun. You know, pork fat, beef fat. Like, what do you want to do? Oh, okay. Duck fat? Like, you know.
I've had sprouts at
Yeah, there's sprouts on the menu right now. There's some Chinese sausage in there.
Okay.
Yeah, they're very good.
Yeah.
See? Love the sprouts.
Yeah, love the sprouts. Okay.
No, yeah, we always, I mean, yeah, it's like kind of, to Christian's point, it's like a low-hanging fruit, crowd pleaser.
Nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. All right. Favorite band or musician?
Over time, I feel like, because I think about like what ages well, like what I like listen to consistently, I would say Sly and the Family Stones.
Wow. Okay. Good.
Yeah. Like, we're talking about, like, yeah. I like that entire era of music as far as, like, but, yeah.
That's a great answer. Yeah. I think about how music holds up a lot. Because I listen to a lot of old music. Like, when you came in today downstairs, I had on Oasis. Nice. I hadn't listened to it in a while. I'm like, see how Oasis is holding. I like to check back with Oasis every couple of years. And you know what? It's good. It's very 90s. It's very and it takes me back to that time. All right, favorite movie?
I will say, to this day, I may not watch this movie once every 5 years, but it still gives me this feeling. It was the Indiana Jones movie, but I think my favorite would probably be Temple of Doom. You know, that's like my favorite one, because it's just I've always enjoyed like nerdy science stuff, like, but also history. And
is that with Short Round in it?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's a great one.
It's like, I remember watching that for the first time. It's just like, oh, wow, you can travel the world and like discover things. And like, it was really fun. It was just kind of one of those childhood movies, kind of like Lion King, I guess.
You know? Yeah. Good answer. And then here's our last question. If you weren't doing this, being a chef, what would you be doing?
Nothing.
Nothing? This is it?
I would probably be
extreme, you know, scootering?
Hopping trains, you know,
yeah,
just kind of touring. Because my entire reason of getting into food was to travel. I've never been across the ocean yet. And I use food from different cultures and flavors all the time. And so if I could live a life where I'm not a chef, I'm probably going to be some sort of like vagabond traveling, just kind of ebbing and flowing through life, you know,
eating your way across the world.
Exactly. So across the ocean, what's your first destination?
That's a hard one. I mean, I feel like Africa's got to be on top of my list for sure. I mean, I want to go to Europe, but I feel like everyone goes to Europe and there's nothing wrong with that. But I guess I would go like, I want to go somewhere fun, essentially. I just want to go somewhere to eat food. So if somebody's town or country or place is known for this certain dish, I want to just be able to go and be like, yo, I was able to eat this thing because this regional delicacy, or this, because
there's so much to learn in that. There's so much history in that food. So anywhere is really my answer. But I would say let me start in Africa. Like, let me just start in Africa, and then I'll work my way around.
Cool.
All right. Well, that's a wrap on Christian. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you. Appreciate you both.
And that concludes our conversation with Christian Hunter of Atelier. Thanks for listening. And hey, Danny, did you ever get that beer on the menu at Scofflaw? I know I asked you.
Yeah, actually, since the last time you asked.
4 to 5 minutes
every
ago.
Every single place, yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening this week, and be sure to drop us a review, positive reviews only.
We did get a hilarious 1-star review in Apple Podcasts.
I'm not laughing,
but had no, there was no context for it.
My best
I think
guess
it was one
is
of Tim's exes.
No, I'm friends with all my exes. They're giving
which Shannon loves.
They're giving 5 stars. No, Shannon's friends with them too. I'm real. No 1-star reviews. I think someone accidentally tapped a 1.
Yeah.
They're like maybe having a stroke and like fell over on their phone. Something like that. So anyway, RIP to the person who perished rating our show. It should be 5-star. I'll reach out to the people at Apple.
Yeah, we'll try to get them to correct it.
Steve Jobs. I'll reach out to him. He's around, right? I was at a business thing once. There was like a business, seminar. And this guy was like, I was with Jim. We still laugh about this one. But the guy was like, he's like, well, as my personal mentor, like my North Star in business, Steve Jobs once said. And Jim and I were like, are you kidding me? Like, this is like your business idol and
yeah,
you don't know his name.
Yeah.
Anyway, thanks for listening and listening to our bullshit. This episode was produced by Matt Haddock, music by Captain Cuts, and you know our real work's done by Joe Guzzo III. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next week.